So how did you go reading through the book of Ecclesiastes? 12 pages, not too long. How did you go with some of the study questions? Did you get a chance to answer some of those ones? Well, it's a bit of a challenge, isn't it, to do some things afterwards. Well, someone has written, the book of Ecclesiastes can be compared to pieces of broken glass. Each piece of glass is like one of the aspects of life mentioned by the preacher, Solomon. In his book, he sees life as empty, meaningless, confusing, like bits of glass which are piled on a table. But at the end, he can see that life can take on meaning, and if the pieces can be formed into a beautiful and meaningful pattern only. Have any of you ever seen a kaleidoscope? Used to have one of those ones. You used to flick it around. It's like that sort of thing. It's like those bits and pieces of glass which are piled on a table. But when they come together, you can sort of see a picture starting to form in the right perspective. We today are on a journey through the book of Ecclesiastes, which we are assuming was written. At least it was dictated by King Solomon, the 10th son of King David. The week before, we commenced and noted that Solomon was on a search for purpose and meaning in life. Life under the sun, Solomon says, appears to have substance, purpose, yet when you dig into it, Solomon says it's like the ultimate, it lacks ultimate purpose and meaning. You may remember we had a reading back in Ecclesiastes 1 verse 3. What profit or advantage has a man for all his labour in which he toils under the sun? The word advantage you find there, or profit, it comes from the original Hebrew word meaning that which is left over after the transaction is complete, something which is left over. Under the sun, remember I shared, very important to remember the word under the sun. It's as Solomon looks at life, not saying he doesn't believe in God, but just ignoring God. Under the sun, seeing, does it make any sense? That's what he, and he uses under heaven as well, under sun. And he used it 35 times through this book as he refers to and looks at life. And Solomon commenced with saying that this was all vanity or meaningless, a wisp or puff of wind. Life passes so quickly, and often at the end, it seems to lack purpose and meaning for all the things that we may have been involved with. And so we continue with Solomon looking on a search for purpose and meaning. And doing that, he first wants us to look at, if that will work. Sorry, Tim. He wants to look for meaning, and we look at Ecclesiastes, the end of chapter 1, verses 12, just going into 2:1. It's like a summary of what Solomon is going to actually tell us in chapter 2. And we find in verse 13, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom, Solomon's saying, concerning all that is done. He's changed to under heaven this time, but it's under sun or under heaven is the same term. So what he's saying is, I examine all under heaven, what will last and what has meaning. An intentional search, as Solomon's doing. And verse 14 says, I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed always vanity and grasping or chasing after the wind. Have you ever tried to catch wind? Have you ever tried to go out on a windy... Actually, I was laying in bed last night and I could hear the wind blowing a door. Have you ever tried to go out and catch wind? It's impossible, actually. In fact, it's a futile waste of time. It can't be done. And that's exactly Solomon's point. Wisdom under the sun fails to satisfy the soul. This observation actually demonstrates Solomon's wisdom. For the more knowledge we acquire, the more we realise just how much we are ignorant. Socrates, a great Greek philosopher, once said, "I am the wisest of all Greeks because I of all men know that I know nothing." In fact, the more we are educated in current events, the more serious the world's problems seem to appear. The better we understand the vastness of the universe, the more insignificant we find ourselves to become. In other words, increasing knowledge often compounds our sense of futility. The poet T.S. Eliot once just remarked, "All our knowledge brings us nearer to our ignorance." All our knowledge brings us once near to our ignorance. And Solomon looks at many places. He looks at wisdom, folly, relationships, works, and pleasure. And in verse 15, he says, "What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be numbered." The inventor, Thomas Edison, conducted 50,000 experiments, all of which failed, before inventing the new storage battery. When someone asked him of his lack of results, he replied, "At least I know 50,000 ways that it won't work." And that's where Solomon is too. He can tell you where you won't find the answer, and that's perhaps his progress, but at this time, he cannot say where you will find the answer. And so we move into chapter 2. As we move into chapter 2, we move from what Solomon observed as he looked around to his own personal experience. You'll find over 30 times in chapter 2, Solomon says, I did, I gained, I made. And there are three main things he looks at: pleasure, wisdom, and labour. Let's look at pleasure first as he reflects upon the pleasure. Solomon writes in Ecclesiastes 2, 1 and 2, "I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth," that's with pleasure. "Therefore enjoy pleasure, but surely this is also vanity. I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish?" Do any of you remember there was a TV program called The Funniest Home Videos? You remember that one? If you're my age or older, you may remember that one. You know, the strangest thing, there were so many people laughing at people who were actually getting hurt. It didn't make any sense. People were getting hurt and we're laughing at it. What's the purpose in that? Solomon labels the lighter side of pleasure and a joy as sheer madness. Even in Proverbs 14, verse 13, he says, "Even in laughter, the heart of my sorrow and the end of mirth, pleasure, may be grief," as he writes in Proverbs. Solomon's focus then changes to wine. There's an old saying, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you, I'd add, wake up, feel lousy, do the same things again, partying, getting drunk. What's the outcome? Nothing changes. Futile escapism. Then Solomon focuses on his achievement. Buildings, vineyards, gardens. Yeah, in 1 Kings 10 to 21, record some of these things. Solomon writes, "I made my works great. I built houses for myself and planted myself vineyards and orchards and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove." Solomon tried to create his own Garden of Eden. His buildings, vineyards, gardens, and irrigation canals are legendary. Solomon's temple is known to be one of the most magnificent buildings of all time, the temple there. It took 153,000 workers 7 years to build it. 153,000, 7 years. Can you imagine that? However, it took them 13 years to build Solomon's own house, and there was 100,000 of those. Russell, could you imagine what it'd be like to have that many workers working for you, 100,000? What could you build, Russell? Would it be magnificent? 7 years of building one house. Oh, that's a bit sad, isn't it? Imagine what it looked like. But did all this beauty satisfy? No, it didn't. The projects described here don't seem to resemble an ongoing job or trade as much as a leisure project. The house building, perhaps tree planting and reservoir constructing. Ecclesiastes may correspond to our souls as a new shed, a tomato plant, a sprinkler system in our backyard or on a grander scale than we're used to. But the intended result of personal enjoyment is the same. Yet they will never satisfy, Solomon says. People often see things that that actually make a rival, achieve things in life. What is it that you want to build? What is it that you really want to make it final achievement? Possessions. It's often said the more possessions we have, the more things we've got to cut, the more things we've got to service, the more things we've got to repair, and the more things we've got to look after. People can pour their lives into their houses for what? Lynn and I bought our first house back in Kilsyth for $24,000. A long time ago, obviously. Back in 1978. It was a dilapidated house, and it was reasonable. We took my uncle along with us, who was 20 stone, to jump on the floor to make sure that it would fall through. There was a couple of holes actually in there. We wanted to see if there was any more holes. So Uncle Jack, we thought, if he falls through it, then I'm not going to buy it. So that's our house up on the left hand. There's our dog out the front. Weatherboard house, and we painted the whole of the outside, a bit of veranda, we painted all the inside, and we had it for 5 years. Then the piece of resistance. I built a fernery. I built it on the side of our house. I'd always wanted to build a fernery. It was beautiful. I had a shade cloth over the side. We had the ferns in there. The dog actually, we actually gave the dog back because it dug holes in my fernery, and we gave it back to where it came from, but never mind. It's another story. And it was beautiful. And I was proud. This I'd achieved. We sold the house and we moved to Moorabark. We went back about 6 months later just to see how the house was going. Someone had parked a pickup truck in my fernery. Thinking, what? Possessions, things, do they really mean anything in the end? Big question for us, isn't it? Solomon goes on to speak of male and female singers, musical instruments, and then summarises in verse 11 this way. Then I looked at all the works that my hands had done, and on the labour in which I toiled, and grasped me after the wind, there was no profit under the sun. Well, Solomon wants to turn now to wisdom. And you'll look here for in verses 12 to 17. And Solomon turns and he says in verse 12, then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly, which is a foolishness, is what that really means. Solomon doesn't say that wisdom is useless as such, for he certainly finds that wisdom still has meaning in it, because he says in verse 13, I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. He's not saying wisdom's bad, but he's saying, what does it have meaning in the end? But why? See, when it comes to meaning and purpose in life, surely gaining wisdom, studying, getting just degrees, masters, PhDs, surely all these things will give meaning in life. What do the following men have in common? Albert Einstein, physicist. Edwin Hubble, astronomer. William Shockley, inventor of the transistor. Bertrand Russell, mathematician and philosopher. What do they have in common? Well, Time magazine at the end of the 20th century had them as the top 100 scientists and thinkers of that period of time. What do they all really have in common? They're all dead. They're all dead. Well, that's another point, but Solomon's not worried about it. See, Solomon's not thinking about God. He's looking at, so what about them? They're all dead. They may have been on the list of the greatest thinkers of the 20th century, but now they are in the same condition as one of the greatest idiots of the 20th century as well. They're dead. And he says in verse 16, "For there is no more remembrance of the wise than over the fool forever, since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? As a fool." Great things to think about, isn't it? But this is just Solomon, and he's trying to find meaning and purpose in life at this time. Solomon's not saying not to study. In fact, he's saying it's helpful, but when it comes to seeking out real purpose and meaning in life, both the fool and the wise would die. Well, then he turns to work. And Solomon turns his attention, then he says in verse 18, "Then I hated all my labour in which I toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me." If you look at 1 Kings 1 to 11, we'll get a picture of King Solomon's reign and work. Established Israel's nation as a world power. Built significant buildings and palaces. He set up a worldwide trade empire. Had a huge shipping fleet. He brought wealth to the nation. Massed enormous personal wealth. He reigned for 40 years peacefully, and it was prosperous years. Then Solomon handed it all over to his son Rehoboam, you'll find in 1 Kings 12. How long did it take Rehoboam to basically ruin the whole thing, divide the nation, lose 10 of the 12 tribes of Solomon's dynasty, set up a siege for a civil war, and eventually destruction of the whole thing? How long did it take? 4 days. 4 days it took, as Rehoboam took it over. And Solomon says, "I can do all these things." And then he says in verse 19, "And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool?" And I've seen and heard this many times. Empires built up, businesses, homes handed over to family. For what? Ruin. Some are asking, when Rupert Murdoch finally steps down, how will his empire go? What would it look like? I've seen many people, even work itself can be meaningless. A lot of men and women work hard, achieve much, maybe have great wealth, but find family breakdowns because of the work. Alcoholic or common. There was a time, and it's not quite as bad now, there was a time maybe going back 3 years ago when we used to be able to retire at 65 once. Now you've got to retire a bit, you've got to get older to retire these days. That there was a common stat, especially for men, they worked so hard through the whole life, provided for their families, did everything they possibly could, they retired, and a high percentage of them died at 68. Because all of a sudden, they couldn't find meaning and purpose outside of their work. It wasn't there for them. And Solomon says, what is that worth? What does that really mean? That's just that the questions that he's asking. He said, it's like chasing after. Verse 22, he says, "For what has a man for all his labour and for the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun? He said, it's like chasing after the wind. Someone says you won't find true meaning and purpose in life through pleasure, wisdom, work. They are just a sidetrack. Now, you may be thinking, well, thanks, Tony, that's really great. You've really left me feeling really good. I'm going to go home and sit in the corner and have a bit of a cry. Well, Solomon doesn't do that. Solomon's always on this journey, and there's almost like an oasis in meaning coming up now. Having been driven into like a godless corner, Solomon begins to fight back. The mood changes as we get to the end of chapter 2. An oasis appears in the desert as we come to the end. At first, it seems Solomon is repeating what he's just rejected. He tells us in verse 24 to eat, drink, that his soul should enjoy good in his labour. Remember, he said, don't do it. But now he's saying, hang on a second. Then in verse 26, not to neglect wisdom or knowledge. The ultimate meaning of life is not to be found in these things, neither is it to be found in merely rejecting them. Because it's not pleasure, wisdom and work which provides meaning itself. What matters is our understanding of the purpose and place they play in our lives. That's what Solomon's got to hear. You see, previously Solomon had left out God. It was under the sun. It was an account of life under the sun, exploring everything under the sun. Wisdom began with him, his perspective. With pleasure, it was totally self-centered. Verse 4, I built houses for myself. Verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. As mentioned, Solomon used I over 30 times in chapter 2 on his search. But now, God is brought into the picture and things begin to change. As Barbara read out as before, nothing is better for a man than he should eat and drink and that his soul should enjoy good in his labour. This also I saw was from God. Verse 26, for God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight, who is righteous. You see, satisfaction will be found through eating and drinking or any other material things when it's understood that they too are a gift from God. That's where they change things. Then they have real purpose and meaning. And so the choice is ours. Solomon concludes this portion by saying that these are two paths from which we must choose. We must choose to follow and please God, verse 26, and find meaning and purpose and fulfillment, seeing it like an incredible gift from God and living with it in humility, thankfulness and contentment. It will not mean that there will never be a disappointment, letdowns and failures, but knowing God remains in control. We sang the song before, Ancient of Days. And you may have, and I know it was a newer song, but you may have sung a couple of those verses when it said, I'm always with you, always there. That's what Solomon is now coming to the point. God is in control. The alternative is to go the way of the unbeliever in verse 26. That simply is the way which leaves God out. It is the way of the person who refuses to trust God. Take that road, if you like, but remember the warnings first. It's a blind alley. All that you'll be left with is your paltry projects and your empties, plus nothing. Such life is like chasing after the wind. It's like me building this great big fernery thinking, well, they're really going to appreciate my fernery. Great. Good place to park a pickup truck. That's about all that one was worth. It doesn't mean anything. Perhaps I should have prayed to God, should I build this fernery at the back of the house, at the back of the pub, not on the side house? I didn't didn't sort of link into God than that one there. Well, we're going to wrap up. I'm going to try to wrap up. Here it is. It's coming up here now. Why is it good for us to hear this? Because it can be a temptation to find our ultimate meaning often in these things. Things like pleasure, wisdom, work, possessions. Let me share an example of this in my life as a believer. And we can be tempted, okay? I'm back in 1993, I was walking to work in Richmond. I was working for the SEC that period of time. I was walking down in Church Street in Richmond. And it was a period of time where the SEC was outsourcing all its stuff. And I was walking down and I heard this audible voice say, "I want you to leave work and prepare yourself for full-time ministry." I turned around and there was no one there. I haven't had it very often, but it was one of those times where I had an audible voice from God to tell me that. Went home and told Lynn. Lynn didn't say, you're crazy, which is just as well. And so then I organised and I studied at the Bible College. I applied there. Beforehand, keep in mind that my background was in engineering. Okay, I studied at TAFE. I was an engineering assistant, a design draftsman. One of the reasons I became a design draftsman, I have a speech impediment, okay? And I figured if I drew, I didn't have to talk to anybody. That was my plan. That wasn't God's plan, all right? That's just how God works, okay? A bit of a funny thing. A bit of Moses one for me, but never mind. And so I studied a BCV. I've never written an essay in my whole life. I was an engineering assistant. You didn't write essays. I went to BCV and I'm going, well, God, you've told me in Richmond that come and prepare yourself to work for me. I figured if that's your call, you'll get me through. I studied for 3 years, great 3 years of my life at the Bible College of Victoria. I didn't fail a single thing. I must admit, I struggled in my very first essay. What's an introduction? What's a conclusion? But I got through. I didn't fail a single thing. God, it was God's gift for me at that period. It was he was saying, this is what I want you to do. Prepare yourself for me. I did some further studies afterwards to be ordained. I really believed God wanted me to be ordained. I went to Whitley and I had to be a Baptist pastor. You had to go and study at your own Bible college. And I studied there and back at BCV. I think I got a diploma in a theology and a bachelor of ministries. Okay, and then I studied at Whitley and I got something called an associate diploma in something. I'm not quite certain what it was. I got something there, and I thought that's great, but it prepared me to work for God. Then I thought, oh, I could do a master's. I've got a diploma, I've got a degree. I've got an associate, just diploma. I think my excuse was I could learn more for God. Was it? Or was I saying, won't I look good if I've got a master's? I failed. What was God just trying to say to me? You don't need to have a master's to serve me. You needed these things to serve me, but you don't really need a master's at all. And we can do the same thing. We can think, okay, well, I need that, but what does God need? Is it a gift from God? My studies at BCV was a gift from God. He allowed me to get through. The master's was my idea. I don't need you to have a master's to preach up on a Sunday morning. You haven't got to have a master's to do that for me. You need this studies, but you don't need that one there. What gifts are from God and what gifts are not from God? And that's the challenge, isn't it? If I die tomorrow, I was thinking about this morning. Look, I think I've got my diploma, or whatever it is, diploma in theology and my bachelor of ministries, my other one up on in a plaque. When I die, what will my kids do with those?
What's it going to mean to them? And Tony, nothing. What is important? What is the gift from God?
God also wants us to realize that he will grant these gifts to those who please him. He'll give you wisdom. He will give you knowledge and joy. But to the unbeliever who persists in trying to remake God's world, there's an outcome of just chasing after the wind. This reference to chasing after wind is to the frustrating activity to which the unbeliever works night and day to heap things up only for themselves. In the end, that it means nothing. Someone has suggested for true believers, and I want you to picture yourself. I want you to picture with your hands out in front, and I want you to picture with your palms open and they're out in front. They're cupped just together, palms up. In your hand are all the things that God has entrusted just to you. Your money, your cars, a home, furniture, education, wisdom, everything. All these are his gifts. Remember in James 1:17, we find this. Every good and perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. We are, you are, stewards, and faithfulness is our charge. This means our hands must never close over our gifts, but remain open so that he may use them as required and he may refill them as well. The main conclusion of Solomon's searches gets satisfaction from God's gifts. Satisfaction is a gift from God like salvation. We can take our education, our pleasure, our wisdom, our possessions, and our work as gifts from God. And that's been my experience. But don't let them rule or run your lives. Don't try to find meaning and purpose for life in these things alone. It's like chasing after the wind. We're going to end our service and I want us to sing together the song, Blessed Be Your Name. Like Solomon, we need to constantly turn to God for meaning and purpose and direction. We need to thank God for all we have. And in the song, as we sing it through, you speaks about you live in, and he's talking, it's written by an Australian, that you live in a land of plenty, a land of plenty full. It talks about in good times, in times of plenty, times of abundance. How many times do you give thanks to God that we have so much? We seem to only do it when we haven't. We need to be thankful. Thank you for this great gift. Thank you for my house, God. Thank you for my food, which I can enjoy. Thank you for that gift. And this is where the song comes in as well. But the bridge part of the song has a bit which gets a little bit anxious. It talks about God gives and takes away. God gives and takes away. So let's sing this great song, Blessed Be Your Name.